Welcome to Men's Bible Study, Session 1 of The Passion. I'm Pastor Witt, otherwise known as Pastor Witt. But this is a four-part study. And I use the word study very, very lightly, because we will be doing very little in the text study. What does this word mean? What is John trying to say here? That's not what this is. I thought about this idea. It's something that I've been wanting to do for a while, and I think it's completely legitimate given who we are and who we're going to listen to. I want to think about these 4 weeks that we have together as meditations on sacred scripture and meditations on sacred art. I think that's completely legitimate. And what we're meditating on is the passion narrative of Jesus according to the evangelist John. It is a study in the sense of, I would like us to not come to a text or to a piece expecting to place ourselves in it, but rather be completely drawn into it. That is my hope and dream for these 4 weeks, of you letting your guards completely down and being drawn in to what we're listening, to what we're watching, and to what we're seeing with our eyes, which I'm going to pass out later. I haven't passed it out yet, but there's the other piece of that, because that's what you'll be looking at. And why am I so comfortable saying this? Let's start with the handout that says St. John, J.S. Bach, and Caravaggio. We'll be going through John, some of the John's narrative of the passion of Jesus. So who is John? I'm not going to spend too much time on that because we know quite a bit about John. In fact, this church is named after St. John himself. Disciple, apostle, brother of James, Boanerges, somebody who's not going to seminary. What does that word mean? Who said it? Right there. Sons of thunder, right? Jesus calls James and John because they said, hey, those people aren't listening to you. How about you bring a nuclear zap down and kill them all? You guys remember that? And Jesus says, take it easy. Son of Zebedee, evangelist, author of epistles, 1, 2, 3 John, right? And Revelation, exile to Patmos. Anybody been to Patmos? Yeah, my mom says she always wants to go there, just to check it out.
Who exiled you?
The Roman government. Yeah, we got to get rid of. Well, we can't. We could kill him, but since he's the last one left, we'll just throw him on an island. What harm can he do? We'll see. Tradition has him as a young man during his time with Jesus. So if we look at some paintings, some depictions of John, he always has a baby face. As opposed to Peter. Peter a lot of times is this bearded individual who has a little bit more age to him. John is this young guy. So he lives very long, so much so that we even know who his students were, who end up writing, and then their students end up writing, and then their students end up writing some very good theology for us. Passion. What does passion mean in the traditional sense of the word? Why do we say Jesus' passion? What does passion actually mean? The passion of Christ, Mel Gibson, right? What does that actually mean, though, that word? The passion he has for us? He's passionate for us? Is that what it means?
Suffering.
Suffering. That's right. The suffering of Christ. St. John's Passion is very different than the other three. Very different. I take that very out. Different. Right? The other Gospels, as we know, are called the Synoptic Gospels. They say similar things. Matthew, Mark, Luke. And John has just another view of things, which is beautiful. It's nice for us to have these different angles, these different cameras pointing at Jesus' life in different ways. So we get a Jesus who is in control of what's going on around him. He's not just led around. He's in complete control of what's going on with him from the moment he's arrested to the moment he speaks his last words. A gospel that points to Jesus' glorification, and we're going to talk about what that means. Where is Jesus' glory in the Gospel of John? That's a key. Where's Jesus most glorious in John's gospel? And we get that in the Passion. And today we'll see a longer discussion between Jesus and Pilate about truth and about kings. So that's John. Another guy who we'll follow today is Bach. Everybody knows Bach. 17th and 18th century, late 17th, early 18th century. A professional Lutheran church musician. Some people might look at that and like scoff, like, oh, that's how you describe Bach? But for our purposes today, our church musicians, let's say Dr. Lemahieu Nathan, that's what he is. He's our professional Lutheran church musician. And Bach was in that role himself. But he actually, that was his full-time job, a professional Lutheran church musician. Most of his works are sacred. Most of his life was spent in this town of Leipzig as the cantor of the St. Thomas Church. And some even call him the fifth evangelist. Now I put Isaiah because some people call Isaiah the fifth evangelist. Why would they say that about Isaiah? What's so famous about Isaiah's prophecies? The suffering servant, right? It's all, look at the Messiah's everywhere in Isaiah. So some people say Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Isaiah. Because it's so black and white in Isaiah that Jesus is coming. The Messiah is coming, and he will suffer. But then later on, people actually were bold enough to say J.S. Bach is the fifth evangelist. And we're going to talk about that as well. His preaching through his very personal music and thorough Lutheran theology. So I said earlier about letting our guard down. And I mean that. There is nothing in Bach's Passion, St. John Passion, absolutely nothing that will make you scratch your head and say, do we really believe that as Lutherans? Nothing. Some have said that the best interpreter of Lutheran theology has been J.S. Bach. And I want us to see what they mean by that when we listen to what he does. And then last, well, let's keep going. So what's the St. John Passion? 1724 and later, right? These keep being revised, these passions, right? So in the 40s and the 50s, they're still kind of revising it. Even after Bach's death, some people find pieces and they add to his passion. And there are possibly four or five. And we only have two today, John and Matthew. So there was a Mark Passion, there was a Luke Passion. We don't have those anymore. They say we have snippets, but not enough to actually have a performance of it. So what is a Passion in a musical sense? It's a big cantata. And what's a cantata? A vocal composition with instruments. Vocal composition with instruments. Doesn't sound very different than what we would see by going to an opera or going to watch a choir sing with a orchestra present there as well. But here we have also choirs, duets, solos. And this particular, both of the passions that we still have, Matthew and John, were intended to be performed on Good Friday. Now here's the question that I didn't write the answer to here. Who is going to watch these? On Good Friday, it's in the 1720s, 1730s, Leipzig, Good Friday. Who's watching this performance?
The townspeople?
Everyone. This is a church event. He's the church musician. It's Good Friday. We're going. Missing church on Good Friday? Not me. So this isn't intended for those that are more acutely aware of music or classical music. No. This is for everybody. And I want us to go into this experience with that in mind. I don't listen to classical music. I don't like classical music. Well, the people who went to watch this for the first time didn't either. And that wasn't Bach's intention for this to be classical music. This is intended to be biblical text set to music for you. Right? It's not just, I'm just doing this because I want it to sound fancy or fun or this is what I like. No. This is completely for the congregation. What do they need to hear on this Holy Week, Good Friday? And the amazing thing is that this church musician, Bach, is given this immense responsibility to preach to the congregation where he's not a pastor. That's the big thing. Everybody's sitting and listening. There's no pastor with a microphone or preaching. It's the choir and the instrumentalist preaching to that crowd on every Good Friday. And the pastors and bishops are entrusting this music to do its job faithfully. And I think that's our, for example, that's what this congregation has the privilege of watching or listening to something like this and just putting its guard completely down. I don't have to worry about this because this is faithful. It's beautiful. I don't have to stop and be like, well, disregard what, you know, the soprano just sang because we don't really believe that. No. This is thoroughly ours and thoroughly faithful. You should hear tunes that are familiar to you, hymns that we still sing today. These were meant to add a level of familiarity to this work. And you should be drawn into how personal it is. It should pull you into the drama. What's the difference between an opera, for those who are musicians, an opera and this cantata? Both have orchestras, both have choirs and singers. What's the difference? Exactly. There are no actors in this. You'll see people singing different parts, but you won't see anybody acting anybody out or anybody in costume. This is the beautiful thing. Unlike a play or an opera, the sacred text and the music do all the work. That's why he's even more of a genius, because he's getting the sacred text, for example, from the Gospel of John, and letting the text do the work, the biblical text. You won't see an actor with his hands out and having nails driven in them, or a singer. The text is doing it all. So the Passion is not storytelling. It's actually talking to you, the listener. And Bach was completely aware of his calling as a church musician. I'm going to stop right there. I'll talk about Caravaggio later, because I also have a painting that I would like us to look at. But this is our text. And I printed it out as plainly as I could, with no headings. The only heading is the reference. I took out the paragraph markers. I only didn't take out the verses in case we need to reference the verse numbers. Everything else is black and white. the text, just as the originals, the manuscripts were, right? There was no, the sentences just went on, not even punctuations. So let's read it. Can we go around verse by verse? Start right here, we'll go this way, and then this way, and this way, and we'll keep going. Go ahead.
When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered.
Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples.
So Judas, having procured a band of soldiers and some officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, went there with lanterns and torches and weapons.
Then Jesus, knowing all that would happen to him, came forward and said to them, "Whom do you seek?"
They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them.
When Jesus said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground.
So they asked him, "Who do you see?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth."
Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you seek me, let these men go."
This was to fill the world the word that he had spoken. Of those whom you gave me, I have not lost not one.
Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus.
So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me?"
So the band of soldiers and their captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him.
First they led him to
Annas,
where he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year.
John?
It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it would be expedient that one man should die for the people.
Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest.
But Peter stood outside at the door so that the other disciples, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the servant girl, who kept watch at the door and brought Peter in.
The servant girl at the door said to Peter, "You also are not one of this man's disciples, are not one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not."
Now the servants and the officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself.
The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching.
Jesus answered him, "I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews came together. I have said nothing to secret."
"Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said."
When he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered him, "If what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me?"
Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest.
Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So they said to him, "You also are not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not."
One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?"
Peter again denied it.
All right, what are the two big events in this reading? We're not going to talk too much about it, but I want us to know what are the two events.
The arrest and then the first trial.
Let's put that as one. So it's about Jesus and it's about who else?
Peter.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a Peter part, it's a Jesus part, and a Peter part. and things move quickly. We don't get a lot of time to meditate unless we really stop verse by verse. And that's what Bach does. He lets us meditate on these words. And that's what I want us to go into right now. I might skip around, but I do want us just to get into the feeling of how he starts this. So I gave you this sheet here, the 10-pager. It's 5 pages front and back. This is the text in German, and then the literal English translation on the right. I think the literal English translation is much better than the one we're going to watch. The one we're going to watch is Carl Richter. I love Carl Richter. Him conducting Bach is wonderful. Apparently, it's unlike anything that Bach ever heard in his music because he has modern instrumentation, not period instrumentation, and his choirs are huge, and he slows things down. And most historically accurate conductors would have a much smaller group of people singing, smaller instrumentation, and a little faster tempo. And so Richter, of course, I mean, he was world famous, but this is one of the things that he just stood on. He says, I'm going to do it my way, and this is how I'm going to do it. So that's what we'll watch. So John, I'm going to put it on. So it starts with a prayer before it goes into the text. And that's how the choir comes in. The choir begins praying before we get the words of the evangelist in there. you see that beginning part, the prologue, where some actor comes on stage and says exactly what's going to happen. Lord, our ruler, whose fame in every land is glorious. A king, right? Show us through your suffering that you are the true Son of God through all time. Even in the greatest humiliation, you have become transfigured. And this is what exactly what Jesus will show us and John in the peace to come.
Sprach, ich bin's, wichen sie zurück und fielen zu Boden. Da fragete er sie abermals, sehnsuchet ihr? Sie aber sprachen,
now we're on hymn 440. Flip one page before. 439, 440 comes later. And Bach is creative. He doesn't sing. He sings the notes that we have, but not the rhythm. So you should be hearing ba-da-da. Sorry. Ba-da-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-da-da-dum. He changes the rhythm just a little bit, but keeps the notes. Have another example of Bach talking to those with their butts on the pew. This can be performed in any orchestra hall or whatever, but you see the language. Oh, great love, beyond all measure, that brought you to this path of martyrdom. You have to be saying this. You have to believe what Jesus is doing for you to say the next words. I lived in the world in delight and joy while you had to suffer. Right? That's what you're admitting. People know this tune who are sitting in the pews. Right? They're listening to it. This is where it becomes very familiar to them. Now it's not a story 2,000 years ago. It's right there in the pew. Right? And that's what we're trying to do here. Listen to this not as a piece from the 18th century, but as something that's very, very true still today. Now we get the next scene.
Auf das das Wort erfüllte, welches sagte, ich habe dir keine verloren, wie du mir gegeben. Da hatte Simon Petrus ein Schwert und zog es aus und schlug nach des hohen Priesters Knecht und hieb ihm sein Recht Ohr ab und der Knecht hieß Malchus. Da sprach Jesus zu Petrus, steck dein Schwert in die Scheide. Soll ich den Kelch nicht trinken, den mir mein Vater gegeben hat? der Juden nahmen Jesum und banden ihn und führeten ihn aufs Erste zu Hannas, der war Kaiphas Schwäher, welcher des Jahres hoher Priester war. Es war aber Kaiphas, der den Juden riet, es wäre gut, dass ein Mensch würde umbracht für das Volk.
Got the gist of this prayer. To untie me from the knots of my sins, my Savior is bound. That's the last thing that the evangelist just said, right? They bound him. To completely heal me of my blasphemous sores, he allows himself to be wounded. So that's what she sings about in this aria. Again, she's picking up these very strong themes from the gospel and making them and putting it in her own words. The singer, right? Bach does this in his writing. But that's what she prays. And then we get to Peter.
Simon Petrus, aber folgete Jesu nach und ein anderer Jünger.
What does this sound make you feel that you just heard? Give me some emotions.
Like some pep? Like
pep? Skipping. You're smiling, Eric. What is the first word you just said? Before that. All of a sudden, everything has been doom and gloom, and then we get this. But who are we just talking about?
Peter.
He's supposed to be singing this, right, in his head. And everything we know about Peter. This is like, this breaks your heart. You should be crying by the end of today's class based on this. It's all peppy. I'll follow you wherever you go.
Mein Leben, mein Licht.
des hohen Priesters Palast. Petrus aber stund draußen vor der Tür. Da ging der andere Jünger, der dem hohen Priester bekannt war, hinaus und redete mit der Türhüterin und führete Petrus hinein. Da sprach die Magd, die Türhüterin, zu Petrus:
Bist du nicht dieses Menschen?
Er sprach:
Ich bin's nicht.
Es stunden aber die Knechte und Diener und hatten ein Kohlfeuer gemacht, denn es war kalt und wärmeten sich. Petrus aber stund bei ihnen und wärmete sich. Aber der hohe Priester fragte Jesus um seine Jünger und um seine Lehre. Jesus antwortete ihm:
Ich habe ich habe
hohen Priester Caiphas. Simon Petrus stund und wärmete sich. Da sprachen sie zu ihm:
opposite of that theme that we were talking about before. Now it's Peter, and we're almost done here, lamenting what he had said before he would follow Jesus everywhere. To the last choir, the last choral piece at the end. That's how part one ends. But if you read with me on the right, on the top of page 10, should I stay here or do I desire mountain and hill at my back? In all the world there is no counsel, and in my heart remains the pain of my misdeeds, since the servant has denied the Lord. Beautiful. It's again complete opposite of that other piece. And then the last choir, the last choral piece, ends with Peter and with you, because you come in at the end. I did want us to watch most of part one. We won't do that with the other part. There's only part one and part two being much longer. But I did want us to get into the rhythm of how this is done. I know we're almost out of time. I handed you this. I want you to take it home and look at it. This is very much the John Passion theme, where you look at Jesus, and Jesus is he's the only person in this picture who looks sure of what's going on. Everybody else is freaking out. Everybody else is running around. Everybody else is trying to do something. And Jesus is the only still person. And I think you could see that in the St. John Passion. Jesus is the only one not freaking out. The bass who plays Jesus, it's always a bass, stands very firmly, sings his lines straight, no frills, and that's the John Passion Jesus, the only person who's completely unshaken throughout the entire Passion. And that's this Jesus right here that Caravaggio portrays. Where you have all these people running around, from John with his hands up in the air, supposed to be Peter with the lamp and the soldiers and Judas in the middle, and Jesus is the only one not freaking out. It's beautiful. Any last comments? I know we watched a lot today. We didn't stop to talk a lot, and our time is nearly up. It's actually up already. But anything that you'd want to say of what you heard or what you saw from this performance or what we've talked about?
So with regard to Peter and his denial of Christ, is his admission of love for Christ three times in the risen Christ for us?
I think you just answered your own question. Oh yeah, man. Especially if you're a Bach Christian, where the entire text talks to you just as it's talking to Peter, right? And just how it's talking to the first century Christians. Man, I step on it all the time with Christ, and now he still comes back and says, do you love me? Not just once, not just twice, right? Three times with Peter. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I think it's fascinating how the chorale sort of represents us and the crowd and like our thoughts and like the prayer at the end. It reminds me of what Dr. Byens taught during his Bible study on the Passion last year, talking about when Pilate is deliberating about letting Jesus go, about how the crowd screams.
You'll hear them screaming their head off here in this performance. Yeah.
That getting me, you know, and that's what it made me think of, hearing the crowd, like the chirping, like chattering.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's so
really
good.
Really.
Yeah. That's right. Thank you all. Anything else before we close shop? Please. Yeah. What page are we on?
It's on page 4.
Uh-huh.
When it was Caiaphas, who counseled the Jews that it would be good for them. He's great for the people.
Yeah.
Who did he know what truth he was really speaking?
That's right. Yeah. It's so good. You can say that Bach is an unfaithful biblical scholar if you really, if you remembered what we read before and you said, wait a minute, that's not in the text that we read before. And it's true. The following is not in the text. Page 9 is not in the John text. So he picks it up from Matthew. Anybody pick up what it was? How Peter cried at the very bottom. Then Peter recalled Jesus' words and went out and wept bitterly. That's not in John. The bitter weeping is in the Matthew text. But he says, you know what? It's all scripture. So he does take that line from Matthew and plop it down in his St. John Passion. You can walk out if you'd like. But I won't. So it's just interesting bits and pieces. Next week, we'll continue going. I strongly encourage you to take these things home and read this through and see how Bach is speaking to the congregation as well as a church musician. Remember, that's his primary job. It's not as a fancy composer, right? So much so that after he died, a lot of people forgot about him. His works were kind of forgotten, and then they were refound. So I really, really encourage you to read through this again and see how it talks to you. We'll go to, oh, please.
Was he asked to do this?
Yes. No, he was asked. Asked in the sense of, put something together new for us for this Holy Week. That, yeah. So he's commissioned also, right, as a church musician. Yeah, that's a good question. We'll go downstairs. We won't do our entire service that we always do because I kept you later. So thank you very much for that. But we will sing a little bit. We'll sing on page 439. We won't sing all the verses, of course. There are 15 verses, but that's what we'll sing.
Who was the other disciple?
Oh, who was the other disciple that John says, and Peter went with the other disciple? John doesn't like to mention himself by name. So that's the theory. Yeah, John never mentions himself by name, but there's a good... Yeah.